Look at that. It's magic. The microphone moves. Hopefully it doesn't adjust the audio that you hear. Because this is the M2M Show podcast. And when I say show, I mean it can be on YouTube. That's a show, right? It's a podcast, which means it can be on Spotify or iTunes, which it is. Like and subscribe so you always know when an episode is coming. Usually it's Tuesday. Just a little hint, spoiler alert, but you know that. This week, we are going to be talking about technology. So see, that's why I'm imparting all this incredible knowledge about, I think it's called YouTube. Yes, YouTube, and then the podcast. Arthur Erickson is the CEO of Helio. It's based in Texas. He's the CEO and co-founder. We're going to be talking about drones and how they play a role in agriculture and food production. We're going to get into a discussion about labor as well and how drones are being used in a different way, at least in his vision with his company. It is going to be a little bit of a sales solicitation in terms of he's going to talk a lot about his product. We're not going to be comparing it to others, but I just wanted you to know that. That is this week's installment of the podcast, which I have written down on a handy board here. It says, see right there, drones, episode 390. 389, which was last week, we talked about water. We had that discussion in this room, and you can listen to it or watch it. Two different formats, by the way. The longer version is the audio, not the video on that one. In 388 and 387, we looked back at 2021 with the producers of Market to Market. And then in episode 386, Beth Hoffman, she talked about her book. We talked about the transition from city life to rural life and exploring that atmosphere of farming now, which is different than what it was in the city. Here we go. Let's talk drones with Arthur Erickson. Is everything better really in Texas, Arthur?
Absolutely. Everything is better in Texas. I think we have great weather most of the time. The people are friendly. Food is awesome. Barbecue is great.
Can't complain. There's been an influx of people coming to Texas in the last year or two. I've seen that. Why is that?
Well, frankly, I think it's just because we have pretty favorable business conditions. So a lot of business. I think 70 companies in the past year have relocated from elsewhere in the states to Texas. And of course, the people follow the companies, right? Because that's where they're working. So I think it's that simple, just favorable business conditions that could be taxes, just the way the administrations run. Not sure. But
and space.
Yeah, exactly. Space. Land is cheap here still. Not in Austin, but...
Right. Well, Austin's its own. We could do a whole discussion about Austin sometime. But the thing about technology, a lot of people will always assume... something in California. They think of the tech area, but frankly, tech is everywhere. Does your geography have anything to do with your technology background? I mean, there is one big company in Texas, NASA's, organization that we've long thought about with tech. Was that an inspiration to you?
You know, a little bit. So I'm Houston born and raised. So of course I have a lot of pride in NASA and I certainly visited the Johnson Space Center plenty of times. One day I do hope to build drones that go to space. So yes, I'm definitely inspired by NASA. That's true. But that's not the only big organization here. We have Tesla here now. So that's big news, I think. And SpaceX also has rocket operations down in Boca Chica.
So technology, you are an aerospace engineer, is that, or give me your title or your background. What do you say that you are?
I went to the University of Texas at Austin for aerospace engineering, specifically with a specialization in suborbital mechanics, right? So there's the guys that do satellites. That wasn't me. I do like airplanes and drones and things of that nature.
Why that?
I just felt that it was more interesting and maybe practical for my goals, which I went at the drones. So kind of fit.
But drones, you're a tiny bit younger than me. Drones weren't around, but I can always think of the vision of everything flying. So has a drone always been something you've thought about or something flying in the air?
Yeah, definitely. It was part of our education, but even before I went to school, I'm not super young, but I'm 29. So even before I went to college, when I was 18, drones were becoming a thing. So people were building hobby helicopters and drones for racing. And I got into that a little bit. So I already had an interest going into school. And then once I started my education, I very quickly saw that this wasn't just a fun thing, but could be extremely, extremely valuable for a number of industries. So it wasn't just ag that I had my mind on, but I also saw maybe this could be very useful for delivery, for surveillance, right? For media, for defense, pretty much the sky's the limit. So it was a very enticing field for a lot of reasons.
Well, how did Helio come about?
Well, essentially, and we talked about this a little bit before, but I grew up in Texas, like I mentioned, and I grew up on one of my childhood friend's ranch with him. And we've done a lot of cattle raising together and just kind of messing around hunting, things like that. So real Texas country living. And he's actually one of my co-founders today. His name is Mike. And so we just kind of got to thinking one day about how much simpler a lot of the things could be done on his ranch. So like counting cattle or herding them with a drone, right? And this is when I was a little older, so I was already building up some drone skills. So we thought about just how drone technology could help automate a lot of those, frankly, crappy day-to-day tasks that we were doing. So that was part of it. But in school, really, like what it comes down to is I was going to school with Mike. But also a gentleman named Nikhil, who is now our CTO. And Mike had the finance skills. He has a degree in finance. And Nikhil has an electrical engineering and computer science degree. And I had the aerospace skills. So after talking about how things could be easier on the ranch, talking about how maybe we could make a really big impact in delivery, we just all decided to put our skills together and start a drone company. And so at first, it wasn't specifically like, let's just do ag. That was just one of the things that we thought that we could really help out with. So we first designed a drone platform, so both the hardware and the software for cross-industry applications. So we just wanted to make something that was fairly modular, meaning like, you know, you could put different sensors on it. You could put different, You could put different sensors on it, different payloads, and then we want to design a software that was simple enough for anyone to use. So we don't want you to have to be an engineer or a pilot necessarily to utilize this properly. We just wanted you to be a person with a goal in mind. So then you are only two or three clicks away from doing some sort of task. So that's how we first built out the platform. And we did try a few industries. So we experimented with ag a bit, with delivery, and we did actually a delivery project down in Costa Rica. So like Amazon, how they have Amazon Air and Google has Wing. We did a similar thing where we were doing actual like beyond line of sight commercial deliveries of food and beer and medicine to various customers in Costa Rica. So in an urban setting in San Jose, capital down there. But ag just won out. It was the thing that we had an affinity for. So we were good at it. We liked it, but it also made a lot of money. So it was very valuable. That was validated like from our business perspective. Like that's where we were striking the gold, so to speak, and able to make cash to keep reinvesting into our company's growth. But it was also really impactful for our customers. So you were able to, like in Central America, for example, where we've done a lot of work, you could take a farm where they were doing most of their crop care manually using backpack sprayers or literally by hand, like spreading fertilizer and stuff. Take those farms, you could reduce the amount of labor needed by like a factor of 80% and speed up the work processes by like 90% or sometimes even more. Ag just ended up being a really big hit in a lot of ways. And that's what we ended up focusing on. So since 2017, we've done strictly agriculture.
So are you making the machines themselves and the software and the design of how that implements whatever the task is at hand? Are you just doing the software, the hardware? What's Helio doing?
Yeah, we do everything. So the hardware is one part of it. And of course, like that needs to be robust, easy to use, easy to maintain. It needs to do the work. So it needs to put out the chemicals that it needs to put out in an efficient and accurate way. But we also make the software to control it. Because what good is the hardware if it's like completely arcane or not usable by a normal person or a farmer? So the software, that's all done in-house as well. And the primary thrust of that, like I mentioned earlier, was just to make this as simple and intuitive as possible and, you know, eliminate human error at every step possible. So this is just a human giving top level objectives to these machines and then them being smart enough to go execute those as autonomously as possible to take you out of the equation.
Now, on your website, there's lots of different options. What's the one over your shoulder pictured? Is there a number to that? Is that the basic one, the most efficient? Tell me what it is.
That is the AG-122. It's got a 20-liter capacity, which is 5.2 gallons imperial. It's our biggest model right now. So it's definitely the top producer in terms of amount of work that's possible within a given time frame. You could do 30 to 35 acres per hour with that guy. And typically, just for reference, you're spraying close to like a gallon per acre rate, maybe 2 gallons per acre, as low as possible. So you're spraying typically lower dosages lower volume amounts than you would with ground sprayers or airplanes. And so that's how you kind of get away with more bang with less liquid.
And it's more of a spot thing, right? Not a broadcast. Like an airplane, if I needed the whole 40 acres, I'm bringing in an airplane. But if I've got trouble spots along the waterway or things that I need to go get rid of some type of weed, this is the device.
You'd be surprised. We first went into this business designing these drones thinking that they were going to be primarily for spot spraying, like you mentioned, which is something that they're very good at. And also we thought people would use them for specialty crops, which is, you know, just like berries or citrus fruits on smaller amounts of land, but high impact, right? So like high dollar value per acre. We thought that's where they would be used, but it turns out that most of our customers actually do use the drones for broadcast spraying. So they'll use 2, 3, or 4 of them at a time in fleet formation, and they'll just pump out acres. So a single drone, of course, can't do as much as a plane or tractor, but 4 of them going at once, and if you're working 8 hours the whole day, you can do 500, 600 acres per day. So that's actually the most common use for our drones right now, surprisingly. Mostly people displacing what would have otherwise been helicopter application or airplane, but mostly helicopter in their given area. They're using, like I mentioned, 3 or 4 of our drones instead.
So, is somebody buying 3 of those at a time? Is that a rent? How does that work?
Typically buying. We are experimenting with a pay-as-you-go lease model, but that's on a very small pilot basis right now. Mostly, the vast majority of our customers just buy the drones up front, like you would buy a car. And with that, you get our service, warranty. We train you. We help you out with the regulations. So you buy it, you own it, and then you just keep whatever you make.
Now, I know with some drones, like the ones that we might use at Iowa PBS to fly for video or farmers will use, some will have 2 operators, so one to fly and the other one to take the video or to operate the camera. Is this solo operation, dual operation with someone who's flying down the field and applying the chemical?
Yeah. Sorry, you cut out for a second there. Could you repeat that?
Basically, is this a one operator setup or 2? Is somebody flying and spraying, or is there a pilot and an applicator?
Yeah, it's typically, well, it depends. One person can certainly operate more than one drone. So a person can go out with 2 or 3 drones, and their job is basically just like NASA mission control. So they're sitting there with a tablet or a laptop. They're seeing these 3 drones connected, for example, all working in tandem, like a little beehive, right? They're going out and buzzing around, spraying stuff. And then that operator is also swapping batteries and swapping tanks when the drones come back. So they kind of all work from a central location. They go out, they spray their individual fields, come back in the middle, and then the operators swap the payload, like I said, and charge the batteries. So you can do it by yourself. Sometimes it does help to have multiple people. So one person on the computer, for example, and another person that's actually doing the physical tasks. So the batteries and the payloads. So usually that actually works out pretty well. Like 2 people, 2 operators with 3, 4, or 5 drones.
All right. What's the price tag of the one up above you? You're top of the line right now.
The drone itself is about 30,000. So it's just under 30,000. With all the accessories that you need to run it continuously, you'd be 38, 39,000.
Seems like a lot of money for someone who might have just a few acres. Is this one of the, when you're talking about the customers, is this someone with a lot of acres that's trying to spread this cost out over?
Generally, yes. But I also should add that most of our customers are businesses themselves. So they're custom applicators that are buying our drones, of course, to use as tools to make money. So they typically already have plenty of clients lined up that do have these right-of-ways or these waterways, smaller areas, more complicated areas that they otherwise couldn't get serviced. They're willing to pay a premium for someone to come in with a small, lean tool like a drone to go target those areas. So most of our customers are fairly successful making decent money using these drones. So the $38,000 price tag seems pricey up front, but people will typically pay them off within one or two seasons.
And it's less than a tractor or an airplane or a helicopter, maybe not rented for just once or twice. But what's the... So camera operated, can I also take some video or photos if I need to or need to see what's underneath this drone?
Yeah, so you can attach a number of different sensors to this thing. Its primary job for sure is to apply. So, I mean, this is like, this drone up here specifically, like the F-350. It's a big drone. So you probably wouldn't want to use it just to go scout out a few hundred acres with like a tiny 1 pound camera because it's overkill. but you can attach, so there's FPV cameras, you could put RGB cameras in the front, back, you could have a dual view to see what's in front of it, what's behind it, what's underneath it if you wanted to. We have customers that ask us to put on multi-spectral sensors. So right, this is seeing beyond just RGB light spectrum, this is able to detect heat differences. And through that imagery, you can see where the nutrients are lacking in a field, where you might have some pest pressure, so some fungus or another outbreak of that sort. So you can, they're super flexible. You can plug and play a lot of different sensors onto these.
So how does this all play into the whole food supply issue? And why is there a connection between these two? I wouldn't normally put one between the two.
Yeah, there's obviously some issues with the supply chain today. And we don't have to get into that, but there's a number of factors everybody knows. So it's becoming harder to get things that you want, right? So like, for example, my girlfriend, she loves herring. So we went to HEB the other day, which is a big grocery store down here in Texas, of course. No herring on the shelf left. Also no enoki mushrooms. She's a big fan of those too. So there's already things that you could see people are cutting back on, or stores are just dropping because they simply like don't make sense to get over here because they're made overseas. The important thing about drones is that they're homegrown, right? So we make them here. They're relatively cheap. So even if you're like a small or mid-level farmer, like you mentioned earlier, they're cheaper than a tractor. So this is a tool that can really increase your ability to produce. Even if you're not some giant corporate farm, if you don't have millions of dollars, you can pick one of these up and it can make really make a big impact on your production, allowing you to produce more than you otherwise would with relatively few resources, with a relatively small investment. So the idea is that if we can deploy more of these drones with less resources, we're able to be more efficient. And in these trying times that we're all living in, we could start actually producing more food and just necessities here stateside that we normally would have imported. Or we could even focus on crops now for sale within our country instead of just doing monocrop sales to China and things of that nature. So this just gives people more flexibility, like more power to produce on their own with limited resources. That's the connection. And also the ability for the drones to spot spray and to reduce chemical usage is also huge, right? Because a lot of the chemicals and the pesticides we get to bolster our production do come from overseas, and that's getting more expensive and harder to find. So like Roundup is like twice the price right now. And Roundup is controversial for a lot of reasons, but it is a valuable tool when used properly. So a lot of people can't get a hold of that right now. And it's doubling in price, might go up even further. So using a drone like we have, instead of using Roundup on your entire field, what you might have otherwise done with an airplane or a helicopter, you can just target 10 or 15% of your field and protect the entire thing. So that's the idea behind that as well.
Well, and there's the issue of drift that always happens or always is discussed. If someone is spraying in a high wind time, you can't always fly the drones. Now the one behind you, I'm not 100% sure that might be able to withstand a little more wind, but an average craft is not supposed to be in heavy wind conditions. So you're going to cut down on some of that drift, I'm guessing, as well.
Oh, absolutely. So the trick with the drones is that, and you'll see this with helicopters, the rotor downwash pushes all the product down to the crop. So even in wind conditions like above 10 miles per hour, which would otherwise be pretty windy for like a ground rig, the downwash is still so powerful that you're not really worried about drift. So you might have the spray from the drone displaced by 2 or 3 feet left or right, but it's consistently displaced, and there's not any extraneous product being just floating away, right?
Sure, that makes sense. So you're also, it sounds like you're trying to, that most valuable commodity that we're not making more of, and that's time. If I can have more time and maybe cut down on an expense, in one of the articles written pieces of information about your product, it was talking about more local food and the efficiency. And those two to me are tied together, time and efficiency.
Yeah, absolutely. So another important thing or hot topic these days is the fact that farm labor is dropping dramatically, right? People probably just don't want to work on farms, right? Most people my age, especially like the newer generations, they prefer to move to the city, get a job, doing something else, financial services or engineering, whatever it is. So farms are emptying out, and it's really tough to find people to work on them. So again, part of the reason why these drones exist is the automation aspect, which is one person being able to handle 4 or 5 of these and doing the work of, 10 men, just with, themselves, the drones, and a computer. So that's definitely a big angle. And more efficiently, so more time efficiently, like you mentioned.
Well, in the Midwest or in the I states where I'm at, vegetables isn't quite the thing, but where you're at, Texas, Arizona, California, vegetables are kind of spaced out. And if I can save 2 to 5 laborers and put them back into picking status or maintenance status or planting status, I'm cutting down on food waste. Am I gathering what you're saying correctly there?
Absolutely. Yep.
Earlier you were talking about, I was thinking about Spider-Man almost, how we had all those drones together putting out an image of some kind, and there's armies of them. Do you see them? There are going to be armies of these drones in fields within 5 years?
Oh, I get you. I get you. The Spider-Man. Yeah. They can, I guess, appear a bit villainous on the surface if you have a bunch of them going out there. The idea is that one day, and this is what our company is building to, you do want to eliminate the human from the equation pretty much entirely. So right now we talked about it, the human goes out there and he's still commanding the drone. So he's saying, go spray this area. They're doing it automatically, but he's giving them those high level directives. And then the operators are also swapping the payload and the batteries. So that swapping the payload and the batteries, that's something that we want to completely automate. So you want to imagine a shipping container, like a big metal container full of 4 or 5 drones that you plop down on your farm. And it's full of not just spray drones, but also scout drones. So you're going to say, here's the boundary of my farm. They plop this container down. You fill it up with enough water and with enough product for the week. And then you say, here's my boundaries. Fix whatever needs to be fixed. Scout drones come out of this thing automatically, scan your field. They say, you got a nutrient deficiency here. You've got a Palmer pigweed outbreak here, northeast end of your field, what have you. And then that scout drone is going to relay that information back to the base station. Spray drones are going to go out and take care of that accordingly, come back, and they're going to do that, throughout this entire week. And then you come back as the operator maybe once a week or maybe even once a month just to refill those product levels and to give it new top level directives. That's the ultimate idea. And yes, in this vision, you would have dozens, if not hundreds of drones on fields, depending on their size.
Wow. Yeah, that really is. We're back there in that that big final scene then over the London Bridge with all of these things.
Yeah, exactly.
But do you worry about? I mean, farmers are the type that they like to. I mean, yes. Let's face it. GPS auto steer has made things wonderful in cabs. So we're getting used to this idea of automation, but to not be around when something is being scouted, treated, and cared for, that seems like a huge leap of, oh yeah, it's fine. My drones are working.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an intense problem. You're absolutely right. Like reaching that true level 5 autonomy is no small task. And that's why it's going to take a lot of smart people working very hard with resources to actually get to that level of trust. And that's the whole secret, right? That's the $1 trillion product right there. So us and several other companies, of course, are pursuing that goal. So we'll each make our strides, and maybe 10 years from now, the combination of all these companies is going to make what we're describing, some sort of Jetsons-esque future of farming.
We still want we were promised jetpacks. I know that's a band name, but we all still thought we'd be able to walk and fly anywhere like they did with the jetpack. Do you see the way that the drone is moving forward and finding a place and finding opportunities that there are going to be people who are all in on this, are going to leave others behind, or are there going to be those that push back? How do you talk to that person that's like, that's a little much for me?
Yeah, in a lot of ways, I think this is, of course, I barely remember when cell phones first started coming around, but I think this is kind of like when cell phones first started, only like business people, like there's like Michael Douglas in Wall Street with like the giant phone, only like the rich business people would have them. And of course, he had a leg up, so he was able to do business faster than other people. So it was definitely an advantage. But the point is, I think the technology will just get to a point where it's so easy to get into that it's not going to be a problem for you to adopt this later. You're just going to be missing out on the first 3 or 4 years of benefits. So no one's going to get left behind, but there's definitely, the sooner you get into the drones, the sooner you're going to start reaping the rewards, and you're going to have just like that leg up on people. Mm-hmm. But eventually this will be ubiquitous. It's going to be cheap enough, accessible enough, intuitive enough for pretty much anyone to use. Like even old people have cell phones these days. You know, they have smartphones and they know how to use them decently well. So it's going to be like that.
Well, I didn't have the Michael Douglas phone. I had a phone, I believe it was 1995 or 96 was my first cell phone. So I do remember when they became much more consumer driven than just the Wall Street types. Is your software on the crop scouting exclusive to your company? Are you able to integrate other companies' crop scouting software that may already exist or works with another company? How do you get those languages to talk to one another?
Yep, it's very, very open by design. So there already are, of course, many, many, many companies that specialize in like digitized agronomy. So there's really basic map file formats. There's KML and shape files, which I'm sure you've heard about. So almost all the software out there utilizes KML and shape files to just transfer the GPS and map information. So we can take in any of these industry standard file formats, and you can spray based off that data. So if you have from like my John Deere app, if you have a heat map, prescription map, you can export as a KML, import right into our software, which is called AgroSol, and then spray based on that. So it's like I said, very open, very flexible. You can bring in data from anywhere. You can also gather data, of course, using our drones and just do the whole thing vertically integrated if you'd like.
Open source. I like that. Open concept. You mentioned local. I believe you said these machines are made in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So in our office location in Richmond, Texas.
In Richland, Texas. So did you have issues with chips or some of the technology components here during the supply challenges that we've had?
No. So we sourced the chips from a company in California. And we've talked to them a bit about it. We're not feeling the pain because our chips are relatively simple. So we're not talking like supercomputers, right? And they're not having to do too much processing, at least not right now. So we haven't really felt the pain yet, but it's an important concern to have. I think that the U.S. in general needs to move towards chip independence, which is, of course, a hot topic that everybody's talking about. I definitely think it's important. It's not that we shouldn't leverage the global economy when it's appropriate, but we need to have alternate routes for sure, right? You got to be prepared for almost anything in a situation like this. So it'd be nice to have at least some domestic options in the coming years.
You talked a little bit about Helio, I asked about the next 5 years. What do you see as the greatest accomplishment? What's the goal that you have here for the next few years for your company?
Basically, we want to be a household name. So this name Helio, we want everybody to know it. And like you think about Coca-Cola, we want you to think about Helio when it comes to agricultural drone technology. It's still a very, very new field. Mostly it's been dominated by China-based companies. So DJI is a huge drone company, which a lot of people know because they make almost all the camera drones in the world. So the little DJI Mavic or the Phantom that people have just for making cool videos, that's all from this Chinese company called DJI. So they've mostly dominated the market, including spray drones. They do make spray drones. So at least here stateside, there's not a lot of companies doing what we're doing. In fact, we're one of like two or three. So it's a very uncrowded market. There's a big opportunity for a company, even as small and young as ours, to make a big impact and make a name for themselves, right? And we're going to do that by delivering the most innovative, most reliable technology, but also simply by caring about our customers and their success. So we're not here just to sell drones. We're here over the next 5 years to really build up a brand reputation for having awesome technology, but also caring about improving the lives of our ag producers here in this country. So making a farmer's life more successful, more profitable, easier, more viable in general.
All right. Arthur Erickson, he's the CEO of Helio and also the co-founder of the company. Thank you so much, Arthur.
Thank you. It's great chatting with you.
My thanks to Arthur Erickson, the CEO and co-founder of Helio. If you like this episode, tell a friend, share it with them. We really like that, and we always appreciate that. Even if you rate and review and like, subscribe, whatever those buzzwords are, maybe we shouldn't use those in 2022. No, too late. I already have. Thank you so much for watching or listening. We'll see you next time.